Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
So let's turn to the US Open conclusion at Pebble Beach. We have Paul McGinley with us. Afternoon, Paul.
Hi, Joe. How you doing?
You very well. So Gary Woodland, I mean, geez, you are the 54-hole leader on seven previous occasions and you never managed to get it done to head in as 54-hole leader at Pebble Beach at a US Open. Everything would suggest there'd be a wobble. I mean, there was barely a hint of a wobble.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know what? He didn't get it done earlier in the year. He had a three-shot lead in Hawaii going into the last round. And even though he didn't win, he shot a 67 in the last round. And Xander Schauffele went crazy, shot 61, 62 to overtake him. But I think he got a lot of confidence out of that he didn't beat himself. And that's what we saw yesterday. He certainly didn't beat himself. And he drove towards that finishing line. You got to give him a lot of credit, with particularly with Koepka breathing down his neck the way he was.
I'm certainly not asking where has this guy come from, but maybe the more casual golf fan might wonder. Like, Woodland's in the top 30 in the world, has been for a while now. He's 35 years of age, works with Pete Cowan. People who know Pete Cowan. It had seemed Woodland came on the scene a while back and was a bomber, could hit the ball a billion miles away. People expected big things. It had seemed of late like he had plateaued nicely into his very steady and very lucrative PGA Tour career, but majors were going to be beyond him.
That's exactly kind of the way it was. Wasn't a prolific winner. No, I'm not getting the right word.
Prolific.
he was prolific, that's it. He wasn't a very prolific winner on tour. And then, middle of last summer, he decided to make some changes. He was with the Harman stable, and he decided to leave that and go to Pete Cowan. And then he also decided to take Phil Kenyon, the putting guru, as well, too, and go down that road. And I think both of them have made quite a significant difference. He's always been a good ball striker, but the big difference has been his chipping. You know, I think it's not unfair to say. I mean, he was bordering on having the yips. I mean, regularly he would mishit chips and duff them and blade them. And that's what made... So he's done a lot of work with Pete Cowan on that in particular, and that's what made the chip shot off the green in 17. Anybody who was up late enough to see it last night, he missed the flag way in the right-hand side of the green and had to actually chip it off the green off a really tight lie. An unbelievable shot. He hit it to 2 feet and saved par and preserved his two-shot lead going down the last. And, you know, that says a lot about where he's come from and where he is now.
Yeah, it was a very impressive moment. I still wouldn't be overly sure this guy's going to become a serial major winner. Like, it's a massive achievement. What are you expecting from Gary Woodland over the next couple of years?
Well, it's always hard to say, you know. I mean, it's a big change to his life now. You see so many guys plateau when they do win a major championship, for whatever reason that may be. He certainly has the game. And like all of these guys, when it gets to that level and, you know, money's not a motivating factor anymore, it becomes then about what's in his heart and where he's going to drive. He's very much a family man. He's got one baby with twins on the way, so that's going to make things very busy. You know, life could get in the way off the golf course in terms of driving him forward. And, you know, he's not single-minded the way that maybe somebody like Koepka could be.
Yeah.
But you never know. He certainly would have got a big boost from the, certainly not just winning yesterday, but the way he won, Joe. That's what was most impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it is important to emphasise... He won this, and we'll get on to Koepka now in a second, but he had to win, you know, he had to play really well. That 267-yard three-wood on 14, for instance, one of the many moments where he went and won this tournament.
Absolutely. I mean, he was only one shot ahead at that stage, and he hit a huge drive up the fairway, and it was a question of, is he going to lay it up and play the percentage here and make sure he has a 10-15 footer, you know, for a birdie, you know, and minimise the chance of taking six, or is he going to take it and try to hit this plateaued green way up at the top of the hill? And he did, and he pulled it off, and he, you know, played 15 yards uphill. So that was equivalent to a 280-yard shot.
Yeah.
And if anything, the wind was into it. It was a momentous shot. He hit it onto the edge of the green and chipped it onto 4 feet and made birdie. And that gave him the two-shot lead. And it's such a big difference psychologically with a two-shot lead, obviously, rather than one, because you know then you can afford to make a little bit of a mistake and have a little bit of a leeway.
There was a fascinating, I think it was on Thursday's coverage or maybe Friday, you were making the point that Claude Harmon, who works with Brooks Koepka, was showing you freeze frames of how Koepka was swinging the club at Bethpage versus US Open Pebble Beach, and big difference. And he was taking the club too far back inside this week, and he was trying to work on that mid-tournament. Do you know from talking to Claude Harmon, did Koepka get to a point where he was feeling very comfortable out there, or is this guy just ridiculously mentally strong?
Well, the first day he didn't play very well, Joe. And, you know, we spent a lot of good bit of time with Claude. He comes and hangs out with us in the TV when we're doing it. We obviously know him well and we get a lot of insights from him about what's going on. And he came along and he said, God, I mean, I'm really struggling. We're watching Brooks play and he's really struggling. Look at his game. He starts showing me, he was sitting beside me and showing me his two swings. And it was quite contrasting how much the club was coming inside on the way back rather than up and out. He likes to have a up and out golf swing so that he can come across and hit that power fade he does. And he says, I'm really trying to get him, get the club more upright. But what's interesting as well, Joe, is this guy wins in Bethpage. And then for the next 2 weeks, he doesn't touch a club until the Tuesday of Canada. He turns up on Tuesday having the last shot he hit was the last putt that he held in Bethpage. So it's probably a question of just got into a little bit of a bad habit.
Yeah.
So then Claude goes with him on Thursday. After he finishes, Claude goes back and said, this is going to be, we're going to have to have a really good session here because the swing is not where it needs to be. And we're now onto the range. And Claude came back in 20 minutes later. He said he hit six shots. And on the sixth shot, he said, I've got it again, Claude. And that was it. He didn't have to hit any more balls than that. And off he went. He played fabulously well the next three rounds. Tee to green, and that's how close these guys are from being on the game and being off the game and being confident and being not.
I don't know, like there's probably good ways to lose and bad ways to lose. Then, like Koepka, birdie on the first, birdie on the third, birdie on the fourth, birdie on the fifth. Like I was literally on my feet in the sitting room saying this guy is a machine. He cannot be stopped. It was thrilling. He just fell away a touch. I think you have to say, even though he's been beaten by one man here, his credentials have been furthered once again.
Oh, I think absolutely. There's no doubt about that. I mean, if you're going to be hypercritical, yes, it was an amazing start, those first five holes. Six was the easiest hole on the golf course, and seven was the second easiest hole on the golf course. And he had two great chances on both to go even, make even more birdies, and he missed both of them, and then followed it with a bogey on eight. And that kind of killed him a little bit. But that's been hypercritical. Yes, this guy is here. He's here to stay. This guy has got an unbelievable mindset, determination, confidence, obviously a powerful game. Mm. And he's there with a mission in mind, and it's to win. I mean, look at his record in the three majors this year. You know, he's gone second, first, second in the three biggest events. It's quite extraordinary how he's able to up his game because he played in Canada last week and he was a non-event. He finished down in the 40s.
Yeah, that's fascinating about picking up the club on the Tuesday at the Canadian Open. You wonder... Might he, to use the Tiger word, he might just get a few more reps in, just not to give himself so much work to do?
Yeah, maybe. I think the other thing as well is freshness seems to be important for him. He's not a guy that absolutely loves the game, from what I understand. Mm. I played a lot with him when he was in Europe, but he was a different guy then. He was coming through the ranks. Listening to Claude and the guys around him, it's not like he wants to hit balls every day. He doesn't want to beat balls. And Jack Nicklaus was of that mindset. Nicklaus was very often talked about that too, that, when you get it on the range, that's when you stop. You don't try to say, right, I've got it now, I'm going to keep betting it in, because you're just wearing it down. It's a matter of time before you lose it again. And Monty was very much like that too. Monty was not a prolific practicer. He practiced very little because only when he lost it did he go to the driving range. And once he got it, he stopped and he said, right, I have it now and off I go. I need to go on the golf course. And I think that's where Koepka is. His energies and his mindset are very much driven around major championships rather than just bringing up building a big, huge profile of PGA Tour wins.
I know you have to go, so last person I want to talk to you about is Rory McIlroy, who looked so good across the first 3 days. There were so many promising signs, and you remarked upon that on the Sky coverage. He'd come in off the Canadian Open. Everything was almost set up for him, and there were birdies early on available on the front nine yesterday. Like, if there's a good way to lose in the form of Koepka, then there is a really disappointing way to lose in the form of McIlroy, I would put it to you. His double bogey on the second was just inexplicably awful, really, under the circumstances, given the form he's in. Like, it was just a worrying way for him to finish up that round, or to start that round, but to finish up the tournament. Like, really worrying, given the form he's been in.
Yeah, I mean, listen, McIlroy, again, it's hard to be very critical of him. He's had 13 events this year. He's had 11 top 10s, including two wins, top 10 again yesterday. I take your point about the start yesterday. I think he was a bit unfortunate. I could easily have been in the bunker, and if it was in the bunker, he was getting on the green in two. It ended up in the long grass, and he couldn't move it out of there. But McIlroy reflects back on why he didn't win. I think he had a real good chance of winning this US Open because it wasn't the severe setup that we expected it to be. Mm. And that played into his hands. It played into the kind of aggressive play that he golf that he likes to play. And the easiest holes on the golf course, the ones he could play most aggressively on, were the first seven holes. Now, when Rory reflects on why he didn't win that US Open, he played those holes in 3 under par. You know, Kepton was 12 under par for those holes, and Woodland was 10 under par. Mm. So the holes where he should have been on the front foot and getting off to a fast start, particularly at the weekend, he seemed to kind of tread water, and all the guys kind of lost a lot of ground to him. And that was the time. Those first seven holes was the time to put the foot down and go into overdrive the way that McIlroy can. And he didn't seem to be able to manage to do that on any of the 4 days. And that's where he lost the tournament, right there.
Because he did look good the first few days in many respects. So, like, it's impossible to say from your vantage point as to why he didn't manage to play those holes well, is it? There was nothing you could see in his game.
No, there's nothing. I mean, looking at it, I mean, the par fives, he didn't play that sixth hole well. The par five, you know, he eats up par fives. I don't know. I mean, you know, what is the X factor? What's the difference between shooting 61 in the last round of Canada and, you know, being in overdrive and talking about playing freely? And what's the difference in not being able to do it in a major championship? You know, that's the difference. That's the pressures that he's under. That's the expectation level that he's under that we spoke about last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, those expectations are quite big and they're quite real. And you know, obviously Koepka's found a way of dealing with those expectations, not just externally, but internally as well. Mm. And that's kind of the next level for Rory, is to get to that comfort zone in major championships and that dominance feeling that he has. When he seems to play, you know, certainly when he did in Canada and got into overdrive that last day, because nobody was going to beat him. I don't care. Even Brooks Koepka on his game was not going to beat him, the mindset that he had that day. And it shows you the quality of player that he is and why so many of us within the game rate him so highly.
Yeah, no, it's true. 68 for McIlroy Thursday, 69 on the Friday. It was looking really good. 70 on Saturday was acceptable. And maybe the missing piece will be the, you know, he'll start the next major well and then crack on Sunday. Final point, you mentioned the setup there. You kind of were half hoping the USGA would hold their nerve a bit. Last week when we spoke ahead of the tournament, there were some kind of murmurs that they would once they got to Saturday. They never quite did that. It was, you know, there was a layer of mist over the kind of course and conditions were benign, and they certainly didn't let the course go.
No, they didn't. I mean, I'm in the minority view here. I understand that. I get that. I mean, I'm old-fashioned. I'm a traditionalist. I like the fact that the US Open has always been the toughest setup of any golf tournament. And I think if you look, you know, I want to relate history. I want to go back to the great winners of US Opens in the past and the test and the exam that they set, and then relate it to the modern players and the exam that they're sitting. But this wasn't a modern, this was very much a modern US Open setup. It wasn't a traditional US Open setup. It was difficult. Yes, it was difficult, but it wasn't impossible. They gave themselves a lot of margin for error. I know the wind didn't blow, and you know there was a bit of a heavy air in it that kept the greens a little bit damp. But they also gave themselves a lot of leeway in terms of the pin positions were not really in the corners of greens. They kept quite a bit of water on the greens all week. They never really got them to the firmness and the speed that we've seen in the past. And, you know, the setup was wide. When I walked the golf course on Tuesday, Joe, I mean, a lot of the fairways were very wide. I mean, even that sixth hole, you know, they took away the rough on the right-hand side. I know it brought into the hazard more, but it made the fairway very wide. I mean, a couple of those fairways that actually paced the width of them, they were close on 50 yards wide when we're normally expecting 20, 25 yard wide for US Open. So they gave themselves a lot of leeway because, as I said to you last week, I was expecting them to go down that road because they wanted to avoid any kind of criticism from what they've had the last few years. And they certainly avoided that. But a lot of people liked it. You know, a lot of people liked the setup. They thought it was a great winner and it was a great tournament. And they liked the fact that it was tough. But personally, my view, as I say, I know I'm in a minority here, is that I would prefer to see a bit of a tougher test where the winning score was somewhere between level par and 5 under.
Yeah, no, I think so. There's something slightly wrong about Woodland on 13 under and Woods in 2000 on 12 under. But anyway, we're verging on grumpy old men territory here.
Yeah, I know. And I don't want to come across that way, but I just feel like traditions. I'm a great traditionalist, and I love the fact, the thing that makes the major championships so different is they are four different exams. You know, they are very four different tests. And that's why the winners of the Grand Slam, there's only five of them, because it's not just a generic way of playing. Yeah. You have to have four different skill sets in order to sit each exam. And that's why I want the US Open to always be the toughest exam. It's always been that way. And I don't want to see it kind of softening in terms of becoming a PGA Tour setup, but just a little bit tougher. I wanted to see a PGA Tour setup, but a lot tougher. And I want, because I think that identifies different things in players, and I like reading into that and seeing who can stand on the tee, knowing the fairway is only 25 yards wide, and knowing that, man, if I miss this fairway, it's going to be a hack out. Yeah. And that puts a lot of pressure on the players, and who can deal with that and who can't deal with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, as I say, I'm in a minority in that. I think a lot of people like to see front-foot golf now, and I think that's what we're going to see more of in terms of the US Open. I don't know if it's ever going to go back to those really tough setups that we would have seen in the past.
Right, OK. Well, we'll see. We'll give them 1 year of being criticism-free this year and see what they do. Listen, thanks so much for your time. Much appreciated.
It's a pleasure, Joe. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.